Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. How does it feel to live in an insane asylum? I had to ask myself that today in light of what happened. Remember last night we talked about Senator Bernie Sanders introducing a resolution or amendment, which turned out, I guess, to be way long, 600 pages, initiate and institute single-payer health care in this country. And when he tried to introduce it, the normal procedure is to read a little bit of it, and then the person introducing the legislation will waive the right to have the whole thing read, yada, yada. But Tom Coburn, this really prickish senator, psychopath from Oklahoma, where's he from? It doesn't matter. He's from hell is where he's from, demanded the whole thing be read. Well, after 4 hours of reading, 160, 150 pages, Sanders gave up and just said, okay, I withdraw it. That's madness part one. Madness part two, the Republicans right now, right this minute, are staging a prayer, whatever they're calling it. Is it inside the Senate? These crazy people are praying for Jesus or God or somebody to end health insurance reform in this country. Did you know that, Kathy?
Either Oral Roberts has been resurrected or Michelle Bachmann is channeling him again.
They're crazy. These people are absolutely insane. Not only has corporate America taken over our system of government, but they've done so with a herd of insane people in the Congress, every single Republican. You know my feelings about Republican office holders. A herd of insane people in the House and the Senate. And all these little monsters who just deserve to have their pants taken down and their asses spanked until they can't sit down on right-wing talk radio and television, and nobody's resisting. The President of the United States is apparently sucking his thumb and twisting his hair and trying to decide what to do. You know what? You know what's going to happen, don't you? Come the 2010 election, and you know this is going to happen. The Democrats are going to be completely removed from leadership position in the House and the Senate. And as Marcos Molitis said tonight on Overman's program, Obama may have a challenger from the Democratic side in 2012. And poor Marcos, you know, he says, oh, yeah, he'll vote again. You got to wonder why, right? As he pointed out, though, the Democrats have got to stop pretending that the Republicans are the same species that normal people are and stop trying to negotiate with them. That's neither here nor there. In terms of the political reality of the Democrats and the Republicans, I hope they all roast in hell. I really do. But, you know, Bernie Sanders came up with this amendment that would create a fully government-run health care system. Medicare for everybody. And Coburn, This thug from Oklahoma, just a class A prick from Oklahoma, forced the clerk to start reading this entire amendment, which threatened to grind the Senate to a halt for the rest of the day and probably longer. This is just like what Newt Gingrich did back in, when was it, 96, 97? So Bernie Sanders withdrew the amendment. Now, to show you what rotten sons of bitches Republicans are, I mean, they really are, these religious fanatic nutballs. At the start, as David Herzenhorn at New York Times points out, at the start of the Senate floor debate over health care legislation last month, Republicans agreed to forego a reading by the clerks of the entire 2,000-page bill submitted by Harry Reid. That deal that lawmakers head home for the Thanksgiving holiday. But today, the Republicans, you see, assume that Mr. Sanders is a socialist, which he is. But that's not the real reason. The real reason is Republicans are scum-sucking whores, no offense to sex workers, who will do whatever they're told to do by the health insurance industrial complex. And today was the another example. I'm astonished. So to further corrupt their filthy religion, these Christian freaks are now, I think they're doing it right now, holding a prayer meeting, asking Jesus to kill health insurance reform in this country. It has me so furious that I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what I should do. We've done a lot of soul searching here on the Malloy program about whether or not to have a Christmas program, as we've had for the past decade. Longer, actually. We started in Chicago back in 97. Well, I guess that would be 10 years, wouldn't it? No, 12 years. And the argument that we make in favor of having the program is that these pieces of human waste are not Christians. Well, yes, they are. Of course they are. If they're not, who is? But it's getting more and more difficult for me to participate in any of this, not just the political sewer that these Republican bastards have put the country in, but also the religious sewer, the socioeconomic sewer. So I don't know. We're discussing it, because on the Christmas program, some of it is, more Celtic and pagan, like reading the night before Christmas with Molly and some of the music that we play. But we also do a reading from Luke, and which everybody knows is nonsense. It never occurred that way. But so are stories from Greek mythology, nonsense, or Egyptian mythology, nonsense. And I put Christian mythology in the same category. It's nonsense, especially these, the legends. So in that light, we were always able to do it. Okay, it's nonsense, but, it's kind of cute story, kind of moving, kind of sweet, even though none of this crap happened, but none of the crap that the Greeks and the Roman gods or the Norse gods claimed happened either. So, but now it's gotten to the point with me that to focus any kind of honor or respect on these people. And I feel the same way, by the way, about Islam. I don't care how much they talk peace. I don't know how much the Christians talk peace. Both these religions are murderous, blood-soaked, degenerate activities of hatred, both of them. What, you want me to include the Jews? The attitude of the Jews where it concerns the Palestinians is horrific. But for some reason, whatever the attitude of the Jews about their religion or their chosen status by God, that's their problem. They don't do what the Muslims and the Christians do. They just don't. So I'm leaving them out. But these two bloody religions of Islam and Christianity, I truly have just about had it. I don't know. So if you're a regular listener to this program and we haven't made a final decision yet about what we're going to do about our traditional Christmas show, but we're leaning towards just tossing it all in the toilet and flushing it.
Oh, my life. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 22 past the hour. What the deal is, it started at 8:30 Eastern Time, so it's just about over. Family Research Council, focus on the family, and some of these other sick organizations are hosting a one-hour webcast to get Christians and churches to join in corporate prayer. Corporate prayer. I wonder if they get the secondary meaning there. Probably not. This is from their websites, these sick bastards. Corporate prayer to kill the health care overhaul bill. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins will be joined by congressional leaders, prominent pastors, and policy experts to discuss and pray. Oh, my God. Life and death hinges on the Senate health care bill, says Tony Perkins. We face significant threats to the God-given right to human life through government funding of abortions. You see, that's been taken out. Health care, our health from rationing. There is no rationing. Our family finances from higher taxes, you miserable, cheap son of a bitch. And our general freedoms posed by the government plan to take over health care, which is not part of this at all. This is why I hate these Christians. They are lying bastards. Sometimes I honestly wish, I said this the other night, that their hell existed, because every one of these pricks would be thrown into the deepest pit. They lie, they steal, they cheat. And then Tony Perkins adds, there have been a number of critical hours in American history. Our nation has struggled mightily, and under God, always risen to the challenges before us. Tonight, we will face this moral crisis by taking action and obeying the biblical mandate to pray for our nation and its leaders. Is that not psychotic? Is that not clinically insane? It's a goddamn health insurance reform bill, you freak. Sam Brownback, Kansas. Jim DeMint, South Carolina. Randy Forbes, Virginia. Michelle Bachman, Minnesota. Are some of the members of the House and Senate. Tony Perkins, James Dobson, Shirley Dobson, and it goes on and on. Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. Well, I'll tell you what. Coming back after this break, there was an anti-war rally outside the White House. Yeah, what is it, Lafayette Park, across the street from the White House, on last Saturday? Dennis Kucinich spoke. Chris Hedges spoke. Cynthia McKinney spoke. Ralph Nader spoke. Did you hear anything about it? Huh? I would say less than 1,000 people showed up, if I got the numbers right. It might have been less than 300. Did you see any media coverage? Now, of course, if they would have tried to, I don't know, burn things or vomit blood or whatever, I'm sure this filthy goddamn media would have been all over it with their filthy goddamn cameras, right? But because it was this rally consisted of people of conscience speaking out, against war, American corporate media, of course, that lusts after war. It wants war because, you know, it makes for good ratings and they can brand the war. CNN owns this part. Fox owns that part. MSNBC owns that part. ABC, CBS, and NBC all own their own parts. And it makes the correspondents and the anchors look really good when there's a war. So they can put on those dumbass little black helmets where they look like Michael Dukakis in that horrible photo when his head popped up out of a tank back in 1988. Remember that? Oh, my God. They love it, though. Media in this country, especially television, they do anything to promote a war. They come up with music for it and graphics and sound effects. Well, these guys weren't talking war. They were talking peace. Consequently, no coverage. You know what we're going to do when we come back after this break? We're going to play some Chris Hedges, some Dennis Kucinich, and some Cynthia McKinney. Because nobody else will. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Now, we're going to try to play this for you. I don't know. Is our equipment working tonight, Kathy? you never know on this program. We always play it so close to the bone where it concerns the cost of keeping everything running. We really do. Anyway, anti-war rally across the street from the White House last Saturday that nobody paid any attention to in media except to belittle it or ignore it. And there were some pretty powerful speakers there. We have three of them. We're going to play for you a couple of clips from each one. We're going to start out with Chris Hedges, whom you are familiar with. You've heard me quote him considerably on this program. So let's just kick back and listen to Chris Hedges from last Saturday.
Those who recognize the injustice of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as Iran, who can see that these wars are not only a violation of international law, but under post-Nuremberg laws are defined as criminal wars of aggression, yet continue to support a Democratic Party that supports these wars, have forfeited their rights as citizens. By allowing the status quo to go unchallenged, they become agents of injustice.
Yes.
To do nothing is to do something, and they practice a faux morality. They take refuge in the conception of themselves as moderates. They stand on what they insist is the middle ground without realizing that the middle ground has shifted under us. That the old paradigm of left and right, liberal and conservative, is meaningless in a world where, to quote Immanuel Kant, we live in a time of radical evil. Nothing has changed for Muslims in the Middle East under the Obama administration. The wars of occupation go on or have expanded. Israel continues to flout international law, gobbling up more Palestinian land and carrying out egregious war crimes in Gaza. Calcified, repressive regimes in countries such as Egypt and Saudi Arabia are feted in Washington as allies, and Muslim rage is stoked because we station tens of thousands of American troops on Muslim soil, occupy two Muslim nations, and do nothing to halt the illegal Israeli occupation of Palestine. The Muslim world fears correctly that we intend to dominate Middle East oil supplies and any Caspian Sea oil infrastructure, and it does not want our protestations of goodwill, but they want the elemental right of justice and freedom from foreign occupation, and we would react should the situation be reversed no differently. The brutal reality of expanding foreign occupation and the harsher and harsher forms of control are the real tinder of Islamic fundamentalism, insurgencies, and terrorism. We can try and blame the violence on the clash of civilizations. We can naively tell ourselves that we are envied for our freedoms. We can point to the Quran. But these are fantasies that divert us from facing the central dispute between us and the Muslim world, from facing responsibility for the virus of chaos and violence spreading throughout the Middle East. We can have peace if we shut down our network of military bases, stay the hand of Israel to create a Palestinian state and go home, or we can have long, costly, and ultimately futile regional war.
All right, that's Chris Hedges. That was the first clip. Now we have another minute 43. Chris Hedges again.
It is we who are guilty for sending these young men and women to wars that did not have to be fought. It is we who are guilty for turning away from the truth of war to wallow in a self-aggrandizing myth. Guilty because we create and decorate killers when they come home maimed and broken and discard them. We face a crisis. Our democratic institutions are being ruthlessly dismantled by the corporate state. We have embarked on a program of perpetual war, and we are paralyzed by fear. To resist, while there's still time, is not only the highest form of spirituality, but the highest form of patriotism. It is, if you care about what is worth protecting in this country, a moral imperative. As Immanuel Kant, moral autonomy is possible only through reflection, self-determination, and finally the courage not to cooperate. There are hundreds of thousands who have died in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the number would be dwarfed by a war with Iran. Not a lot is being asked of us. Compare our potential sacrifices with what is being inflicted on and demanded of those trapped in the cauldrons of violence in Iraq, Afghanistan, and soon perhaps Iran. Courage, as Aristotle wrote, is the highest of human virtues, because without it, we are unlikely to practice any other virtue. And once we find courage, the courage not to cooperate with these systems of power, we find freedom. Thank you.
The courage not to cooperate. You know, to pick one voice who listens to this program, one person listens to this program, Bob Alexander was talking about that for a long time. That's what flipped him out, where he stopped writing the Moments with Bob. Don't blame him. Dennis Kucinich.
It's a beautiful day here to claim the beautiful power of the people, to challenge our government when we feel that our government has gone in the wrong direction. These wars are corrupting the heart of our nation.
That's right.
They raise serious questions about the legitimacy of the two-party system.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. This coming week, Congress will fold unemployment compensation into a bill which will provide $130 billion to keep the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq going.
Boo!
The message is clear. We have money for war, but not for jobs. Money for war, but not for health care. Money for war, but not for education. Money for war, but not for housing. Money for war, but not for peace. Billions for bailouts, bonuses, and bombs. Where is our security? when 10 million people will lose their homes in the next year? Where is our security when there are 15 million Americans out of work? Where is our security when 47 million Americans go to bed every night hungry? Where is our security where 47 million Americans do not have health care? We are nation building in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and some would have us nation build even in Iran. But we cannot nation build here at home, where bridges, water systems, sewer systems, and roads are falling apart.
Real.
That's right.
We must rally across America to set aright our nation's priorities. We must rally, protest, march, to exercise our civic capacity to bring about real change. Congress must take responsibility. I will soon introduce two bills invoking the War Powers Act, which will force votes on withdrawal from Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay, we have another clip of Dennis that we will play after the break. But Kucinich, like Bernie Sanders with the single-payer amendment, and Kucinich with an amendment that defunds these corporate wars. These are two people, Sanders and Kucinich, who continue to take the route of tilting completely at windmills, which is Quixote and which is Sancho Panza. Can't talk tonight. Kucinich's amendments, how many times has he introduced amendments to defund a war or stop a war? And how many times has he been laughed at? How many times have the media talked about Kucinich saying a long time ago that, yeah, he'd seen a UFO? So have I. If you haven't seen one, you probably never look at the sky anymore. UFO doesn't mean flying saucer. It means an unidentified flying object. But look how the media, look what they did to Kucinich. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, back to the second sound clip from Dennis Kucinich. This is an anti-war rally outside, across the street from the White House last Saturday, where a lineup of progressive anti-war speakers attended and gave some pretty rousing speeches. But of course, you and I didn't know anything about it. Well, we probably did, but America knew nothing about it. Here's the second part of Dennis Kucinich's speech.
The decision to go to war is not the president's alone to make. That the Constitution places on Congress, under Article 1, Section 8, the ultimate responsibility. And we must insist that Congress take the responsibility whenever the president does not. Congress must stop funding these wars. Congress must demand a withdrawal from the wars. Congress must pass legislation to put millions back to work. Congress must pass legislation to provide health care for all. Congress must restrain this administration's impulse to use armed force to achieve a false sense of security. We have a right to defend ourselves, to be sure. But we must not confuse defense with offense. This Thursday, our president mused about the inevitability of war. War's instrumentality in the pursuit of peace. And just wars. It is important for us to reflect on his words, because once we believe in the inevitability of war, war becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right.
Once we are committed to war's instrumentality in the pursuit of peace, we begin the Orwellian journey to a semantic netherworld where war is peace, where momentum of war overwhelms hopes for peace. And once we wrap doctrines perpetuating war in the arms of justice, we can easily legitimate the wholesale slaughter of innocents. The war in Iraq was based on lies.
Wars in Afghanistan and Pakistan are
based on flawed doctrines of counterinsurgency. War is often not just, sometimes just war. And our ability to rethink the terms of our existence, to explore the possibility of peace, peace without war, may well determine whether we end war or war ends us. So let us gather in town squares, in parks, in villages, in colleges, in labor halls, to demand that we reset the priorities of our nation. To demand that we rally America to build our nation anew at home. To demand that we restore our nation to peace and prosperity. They are indivisible. They together will lead us to a new era, and your efforts will be an important part of that. Thank you very much.
Dennis Kucinich, one of the speakers at the poorly attended and absolutely not covered anti-war rally, Lafayette Park across from the White House last Saturday. Having, as I'm sure you have, participated in all sorts of demonstrations over the past 40 years, impeach Nixon, stop the war, end nuclear weapons, nuclear freeze movement, it just goes on and on and on, right? I can remember when my daughter Wendy was born in 1966. And we lived in Richmond, Virginia, and we used to take her in her baby buggy, pram, stroller, whatever it was, and go for a walk out Monument Avenue, where there were lots of little parks. Monuments are all dedicated to Southern generals who fought in the War of Northern Aggression, as it's referred to in Richmond, obviously. And, you know, standing there with a tank of helium and blowing up balloons that said, "Ban the bomb," and handing them out to other young couples who were walking through the park with their children. Ban the bomb. Which was a movement, I believe, that movement began in the UK. And was exported to the United States. But going all the way back to 66, what is that, 43 years ago. all those demonstrations, all those efforts from a righteous standpoint of trying to participate in movements that would bring justice. That's all. That's the only word you need is justice. Don't have to go any further than that. Just the word justice. To bring justice in all its in all the areas that are desperately devoid of justice in a capitalistic system. By definition, all of them are devoid of justice. By definition. And I thought by this time we would have established at least a beachhead. But no. Not to be. All right, when we come back, we're going to play Cynthia McKinney. I have one clip of Cynthia McKinney. And then I have an announcement to make that I think you're going to find intriguing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Kevin Richards.
It's 7 past the hour. You're tuned to the Malloy program. Last hour we played a couple of clips, first from Chris Hedges, second from Dennis Kucinich, who were speakers at an anti-war rally across the street from the White House last Saturday. Oh, you didn't hear about it? Oh, my goodness. It's my understanding that there are only, I've heard varying estimates, under 1,000, under 300 people, maybe under 100. Who showed up to listen to anti-war notables make a plea, one last or one more or whatever, a plea for sanity, all of which will go unheard. Nobody in the United States, except for you and I, know about these speeches, this rally. Okay, a few other people of the 37 who listened to this program. But it did occur. It did happen, even though television did not validate it. Oh, I don't know. Maybe CNN had a little clip somewhere. You know, it was on a Saturday, not much happening. See if we can squeeze it in between Fareed Zakaria and what's her name? It doesn't matter. All right, here's Cynthia McKinney. We have one clip of Cynthia McKinney speaking at this rally last Saturday.
Now, given all these problems, what do our leaders do? Bomb, maim, and kill people on the other side of the planet whose resources certain powerful people in this country want to steal and whose territory occupies the land necessary for global conquest. Instead of investigating war criminals in the Bush administration, President Obama has chosen to become one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our president is now complicit in torture, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and crimes against the peace. So what are we to do? We will not give up, and we will not go away. We are not so demoralized that we can't see the truth. We know that lies are not truth. Ignorance is not strength, and war is not peace. We see the power of the ballot in Latin America, where voters in unrigged elections are choosing freedom. Our freedom is under siege as much right here as it is in Haiti or Honduras. If U.S. politics was truly democratic, then we would not have war. That's why I support Senator Gravel's National Initiative Project. Who has $100 million of their own money to spend to get elected like New York's mayor did? We are ready to act on our dreams, to create the kind of change that graduates students from college free of charge, that treats medical ailments free of charge, that reflects our interests, not the special interests, that elects peace candidates to Congress, and that elects a peace president, too. While our fellow Americans are afraid to get sick, struggle to keep a job, educate their children, stave off foreclosure, and make ends meet, we will not rest. As long as bombs drop and civilians die, we will not rest. While the oligarchs and the war machine get our money, we will not rest. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. lamented that both political parties failed to take a stand for what was right. He said that our scientific power had outstripped our spiritual power, that we possessed guided missiles and misguided men. Well, President Obama, don't be misguided. Stop shielding war criminals from justice in our courts. Stop supporting the Patriot Act and spying against us environmental and peace activists. Stop granting power to the Federal Reserve. Close Guantanamo. Stop torture and rendition. Secret prisons and building military bases all over the planet. President Obama, stop the saber rattling at Iran. Stop the drones and depleted uranium. Stop bombing Somalia. Stop using war as an energy policy. And finally, stop bankrupting our nation.
Well, yeah, except Obama is just the face of all this. Obama is not bankrupting the nation. Obama is not making wars. It's much worse than that. Obama is allowing it to happen through him. He knows what's going on. He's not a stupid man. But this stuff is not his. This stuff belongs to the past 30 years, maybe even longer. But rather than resist, Obama has chosen to be a hypocrite and to do exactly what, in so many instances, what he said he would not do when he was a candidate. And I have one good example of that for you, out of many. But where it concerned the prescription drug industry on the campaign trail, Dana Milbank, writing at the Post, points this out. On the campaign trail, Barack Obama vowed to take on the drug industry by allowing Americans to import cheaper prescription medicine, right? Back then he said, quote, "We'll tell the pharmaceutical companies thanks but no thanks for the overpriced drugs, drugs that cost twice as much here as they do in Europe and Canada," end quote. Well, yesterday this whole matter came to the Senate floor, and Obama forgot the no thanks part. He sided with the pharmaceutical lobby and fought against the very idea that candidate Obama had championed. Senator Tom Carper, a Democrat from Delaware, said it got to be a little awkward. Yeah, I'll bet. It's even more awkward, you know, for millions of Americans who are forced to pay up to 10 times the prices that Canadians and Europeans pay for identical medication. So many times produced in the same facilities by the same manufacturers, simply because the Obama administration refuses to put any pressure whatsoever on the pharmaceutical companies to rein in drug prices. I'm starting to dislike this man very intensely, to tell you the truth. What's the latest? Oh, yeah, they might be tainted drugs. Anyway, some of those favoring cheaper prescriptions have put together in what Dana Milbank calls an impressive ideological coalition, from socialist Senator Bernie Sanders to conservative Senator David Vitter. But no matter who is in this coalition, it was no match for the industry-friendly senators, supported and backed by President Obama, who last night easily voted down reimportation, as it's called. Now, as Milbank points out, there's no surprise here. Lawmakers in the White House are addicted to drug money. The industry has pumped upwards of $130 million into federal elections over the past decade. And the drug industry is now among the top 10 donors, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The drug money addiction, Milbank says, could explain why this administration struck a sweetheart deal with the drug industry, which offered to give up $80 billion in revenue, remember that, in exchange for an understanding that the government would not push for deeper concessions. Remember that? Remember? When was that? A few months back? The White House was determined not to go back on the deal, even though the industry had demonstrated bad faith by raising prescription prices nearly 10% this year alone. Jesus Christ. So when Senator Byron Dorgan, Democrat of North Dakota, brought his reimportation proposal to the floor, the Obama administration pushed back with a letter from Food and Drug Administration Chief Margaret Hamburg warning of, quote, significant safety concerns, end quote. More of this when we come back. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. So hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 22 past the hour. So anyway, Senator Byron Dorgan, Democrat of North Dakota, who tried to get this reimportation proposal to the floor the other night, and the Obama administration, through the Food and Drug Administration head, Margaret Hamburg, warned of significant safety concerns, getting drugs from Canada. Because if you take a look north of the border, you'll see Canadians are dropping dead all over the place. Oh, my God, they're winding up in ICUs. They're winding up brain damaged because of all the poison drugs they're taking. Have you noticed? So one after the other, the drug industry's friends in the Senate went to the floor last night to cite that letter from Margaret Hamburg, written with the approval and encouragement of Barack Obama. For example, Robert Menendez, Democrat, Bristol-Myers Squibb, warned that, quote, you may have a heart attack, end quote, because of counterfeit medicine from abroad. Frank Lautenberg, Democrat, Merck, said this is a matter of life and death. Senator Kay Hagan, a Democrat, GlaxoSmithKline, voiced serious doubts that we can adequately ensure the safety of the drug supply. Senator Carper, a Democrat, you notice these are all Democrats. AstraZeneca cited, quote, remaining safety and soundness and health concerns, end quote. Son of a bitch. Some of you people are still going to vote Democrat, huh? Okay. Now, the arguments don't hold very well considering that 40% of the active ingredients in American prescription drugs come from India and China. Oh, my God. And China, of course, when was it? Was it a year ago? They slipped tainted heparin past the FDA. Remember that? Heparin, blood thinner made out of pig's intestines. Did you see those pictures? Huh? Pig's intestines just rotted, decaying, filth that was processed in these factories in China. You know what the factories for heparin in China are? Somebody's goddamn kitchen, some mud hut. Some old woman standing around, you know, smoking a cigarette and dropping ashes into the pig guts that then becomes, becomes heparin. And these sons of bitches are telling us about the drugs from Canada? But fear was the best argument that opponents, Democrats for the most part, could use to defeat this proposal that would have saved the federal government $20 billion over 10 years, not to mention how much it would save suckers like you and me. We would have saved many times that. And you're still going to vote Democratic? Are you serious? Anyway, back to Dana Milbank, who writes, that's why the drug industry has been fighting for a decade against congressional efforts to allow reimportation. Barack Obama co-sponsored one such proposal in the Senate. He also said during his presidential campaign that he wanted to, quote, let Medicare negotiate for lower prices, end quote, on drugs. White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, when he was in Congress, also... He was also a big champion of reimportation. Yeah. But now, after their successful battle against reimportation, these two are expected to fight off a similar legislative effort to allow Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices. No. We'll have none of that. No. Milbank writes, even before the vote came, it had become clear that Obama's aides had the votes to kill the proposal that Senator Obama once co-sponsored. Senator Dorgan, on the verge of losing another reimportation battle, raised his voice as he pleaded with colleagues. He said, quote, the pharmaceutical industry has a lot of clout. I know that. I hope the American people have the ability to expect some clout on their behalf in the chamber of the United States Senate, end quote. Byron. Psst. Sit down. Really. Be quiet. So last night's tally wasn't even close. The drug companies won with 9 votes to spare. Jesus. So when this is one of the reasons that, you know, it's very easy and logical to look at the whole argument about health insurance reform like so much bat crap. Especially when you have the administration, the Obama administration, that will not even rein in some of the Democrats who have really been turned into street whores, no offense to sex workers, by the pharmaceutical industry. He won't even do that. We'll be right back.
It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. There was an article in the New York Times today. I don't know if you saw it. It was on the front page. Let me synopsize what was written. I've said for years that the Arbitron rating system is a bunch of hog snot. It's a system that was put into effect, I don't know, back in the 60s or something, to rate radio stations. And it was based on voluntary record keeping and diaries, and people get a $5 bill when they got the book and $5 later. But it was a crappy system. For a number of reasons, according to Arbitron itself, problems with the Arbitron system have been numerous. People's recollection is imperfect. If they listen to a station briefly, they will forget it. They might overstate listening to stations that they felt reflected better taste. So what Arbitron has come up with, see, they're talking about their own system. And what they've come up with is so-called portable people meters. Yeah, I know, that sounds like some kind of a sex toy, but it's not. Portable people meters. And what they're finding in using these things now is that the whole radio industry has been a goddamn lie for nobody knows how long. This is something I've been bitching about for years. I remember when I got replaced here at WSB in Atlanta way back in 94, 95 by Dr. Laura. And I wrote an op-ed column for the Journal Constitution that, you know, bitched and whined and moaned about being fired and replaced by a psychopathic freak like Laura Schlesinger. And in that column, I pointed out that Arbitron was a joke, a hoax, and a myth, and so on and so forth. A lot of people wrote in after that letters to the editor that said Malloy's a sorry, whining, left-wing, hair-twisting, thumb-sucking liberal. Ignore him. He got fired because he doesn't have any ratings, which was absolutely not the case. Even though I had great ratings, it was all garbage. Everything about Arbitron is garbage. Now, all Arbitron does is set advertising rates. That's the whole function of it, is to let the stations know how much they can charge. The people on radio, the talent, so to speak, God, I hate to use that word. If they get a good rating in a book, they come out every quarter. If they get a good rating, you know, they walk around like their poop doesn't stink. If they get a bad rating, they bitch and moan and say, well, that's because all the books went to the Mexicans, you know. It's just the way it is in radio. I've been there. I've ridden that wave and been almost sucked under by that wave for 22 years. But during that time, it was very clear. It's very clear to anybody inside radio that the whole system sucks. Well, Arbitron now is finally saying the whole system sucks. And the reason this is important to me is because people like Rush Limbaugh, who claim 20 million listeners every week, that's a goddamn lie. It always has been a lie. Always. Hannity that claims, I don't know, what's his claim? 14 million. That's a lie. It's a goddamn lie. Always has been a lie. And the biggest purveyors of these lies is Talkers Magazine, that's run by somebody who changed his name to Michael Harrison. I have no idea what his name was before he changed it. But he makes his money by selling advertising to these networks and syndicators and stations and personalities. And nobody pays any attention to that stuff. The only people that read Talkers Magazine are people in the industry. Nobody reads that. And as far as making programming decisions based on advertising in Talkers Magazine, that's kind of a joke. My company said, the company that, I have a couple of business partners, and they insisted, let's put an ad in Talkers Magazine. I said, no, I don't want to do it. Well, they prevailed because, you know, I do this part of it. They do the business part of it. And it was just money down the toilet because nobody pays any attention to Talkers Magazine except people who sit there and say, oh, is my name in there? Am I in there? But all of a sudden, it's important enough. It was on the front page, all right, below the fold, but it was on the front page of today's New York Times that Arbitron is more or less admitting that the entire system that has been used to make or break people on the radio, the entire system that has been used to set advertising rates in radio, the entire system sucks and always has.
And now they're finally admitting it. Arbitron. Now, regardless of the problems I've had with program directors and general managers at radio stations and syndicators and so on and so forth, even they would admit that it was a bogus system. If I would get, like in Chicago, so many times in Chicago, my program at night would be rated in the top three or four. And that's a market with something like 40 radio stations. And, you know, I used to look at that and think, yeah, okay, well, whatever. And so did management. The only time management really cared whether or not any of their people on the air got into that number one slot or number two or number three was for the programs that were on during the day, because those are the ones where the ad rates are high. When you do a program like mine at night, the ad rates plummet. Not because we don't have an audience, but simply because, well, there's no reason. After 7 o'clock at night, that's the way it's been.
After 7 o'clock at night, it doesn't count.
Why?
Lost to antiquity. I don't know.
So anyway, I just, you know, it's inside radio crap, and I just wanted to toss it out because I've been talking about this for a long time, and I think I've even mentioned on this program a couple of times. So Arbitron rating system has announced, at least the New York Times has announced, that Arbitron says their system is a bunch of horse crap. And now they're trying these, what are they called, personal people meters? Portable people meters. I swear to God, it sounds like something you would see on a pornographic website. Here, get a portable people meter. It's really fun. And what this does, it monitors people who are listening to radio through some system. I have no idea. I don't know how they're doing it. Talk radio's market is not what Arbitron has been trying to tell people, advertisers. It is. And it's just astonishing to me. I'm so glad to see this happen. I wish I could get into the Wayback Machine and go back to all those little pricks that wrote that nasty stuff when I left WSB for the second time in Atlanta and just say, see, I told you. Do you ever feel that way? Wouldn't you like to make a trip back in time and be able to tell all these bastards that really irritated you when you were trying to tell them the truth? And they said, no, I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I don't want no goddamn truth. And just say, see, there you go. They still, well, Jesus didn't say it. Oh, okay. Kathy in Green Bay mentions all these sons of bitching senators who voted no against the Drug Reimportation Act were happy to vote for it several years ago when there wasn't a chance in hell that Bush would sign it. And she writes, the damned hypocrites. Yeah, they are that. Oh, my, excuse me. Okay, the announcement is after an awful lot of hard work and intense focus. I have a book that's going to be coming out fairly soon. I'm not sure yet of the release date. Reams and reams and reams of copy have gone to my editor. You all know my editor, Bob Alexander in Seattle, who has been working his ass off trying to take this enormous amount of stuff that that we've collected and that I've written and put it into some kind of coherent form. Because when I start writing, it's kind of like a non-literary Vonnegut. I just slide all over in time. I have no idea. And Bob Alexander, who's become almost an associate, for God's sake, has been working now for how long, Kathy? A couple of months doing this? It's been a couple of months. I think he had probably, I don't know, 500,000 words. It was just enormous. The average novel is what, 250,000 words. So God only knows what he's, how close he's getting, but, to having something in a form, that the publisher will say, oh, okay. Now, the process, of course, once Bob is finished with this enormous editing job that he's had, then the finished product will come to me and there will be more editing, then back to him and more editing and so on and so forth. But it's coming sooner rather than later. And I just wanted to mention it because
we're going to count on the sales of this book to really boost the program to where it needs to go. And it's very infrequent. I know Hartman writes a book a month, but you know, he's too smart. I mean, Hartman writes for people who are really, really, I don't know, college professors and people. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, Hartman is, I guess, more well-read than I am. He's certainly not guess. He certainly is. He's more well-read than I would ever hope to be. Hartman is an intellectual. I'm not. I'm kind of a Street Fighter type. So anyway, this book is coming, and it's coming fairly quickly now. So send me an email. Tell me what you think. And you people that want to write to me and say, oh, stick the book up your ass. You know, spare me. Don't act like a four-year-old, even though that's what you enjoy doing the most. But if you really think it's a good idea, and if you'll buy a copy, not that I'm going to hold you to it, send me an email real quick. We'll be right back.
I've got to go by what he told me. Try to tell the truth and stand your ground. Don't let the bastards get you down.
To Mike Malloy.
Cow, all 36 of our listeners are saying, yeah, they'll buy a copy. Maybe. Depends on where the job market is, right? It's already written. It's not, this is not like, oh, I think I'll write a book. It's already written. It's just so enormous and awkward and kind of like we do this program. It's screaming. It's kind of an answer to all these rat bastards who have been screwing everything up. I'm not a philosopher. I'm not a literary giant, but I can kick ass and take names just as well as you can, and that's what we're about. Part of it. I mean, yeah, I know. We should build things up instead, but I believe in kicking down the fences and kicking open the gates and burning all the signs and just telling people to go screw themselves. You know, I can't do nice anymore. I can't write something that is all sweetness and light and offers solutions. I am of the opinion that the solutions available to us right now are fairly limited. They begin with recognizing the kind of global climate catastrophe we're facing, and everything flows from that. This other horse crap that's going on, like in the U.S. House and Senate, it's a sideshow. It's a bunch of freaks in a funhouse. That's all it is. Of course, they're killing us, but it's still freaks in a sideshow. But this is probably, book is not going to be published by one of Murdoch's imprints. It's not going to be heavily promoted by Murdoch the way all the right-wing books are. It'll sell. I'm pretty sure it'll sell. You don't get that many books out there by liberals that are written from the gut. I've read, I know Hartman has about 30 of them in print. I think I've read two. I love Tom Hartman like a brother, but I just can't. I mean, enough with the history and this and that. Okay. Somebody sent me a couple of people sent emails, when was it, a week or so ago, that Hartman actually had said the word hell on his program. And, you know, the last time that occurred, a star appeared in the east, according to these people. So, you know, I don't write that way. I write pretty much the way I do this program. And, well, you know, now this, the reason I'm mentioning this again, you'll notice that my blogs have disappeared from MikeMalloy.com. Kathy has been doing the writing. And the reason I've not been writing blogs is because, you know, I get focused on something like this and it's pretty hard to do anything else. I'm just not a parallel processor. I can't do two things at once. I have to sit down if I'm going to chew a piece of gum. It's that bad. So, it's written. It's being, I'm sure, Bob is going to, eliminate probably 40 or 50% of it. Which is the reason he's the editor. Every actor needs a director. Every writer needs an editor. You know how that goes. I edit the hell out of Kathy's stuff when she writes these blogs that she's been writing. Not for substance by any means, but, because she has her own voice, she says what she wants to say. But, you know, for grammar, you don't pay too much attention to grammar and punctuation when it's just, you know, coming out of you like that. So, but this is not a ghostwritten book. I think every other book, every book from the right wing is written by somebody else. I will guarantee you that every single word in this book will have come right out of my head onto the page. There may be a little bit in there that Kathy has written. We contributed to an Air America book years ago that never went anywhere. They never paid us for it. Those sons of bitches still owe me over $100,000. Air America, my ass. Don't even go there. But this is something that a lot of folks have been saying, why don't you write a book? And the answer to that, of course, is it's too much work. That's always been the answer. It's, oh, God, it's too much work. I don't get enough sleep. I got a 5-year-old. You know, at some point, you got to just get over that and just do it. So it's been done. And again, if you think it's a good idea, I can't wait to read what the little pissants will send to me. You know, like, I wouldn't use your book for anything except toilet paper. Which is okay. Just buy a copy. You know, I don't care what you do with it. Stick it in your nose. I don't care. But let me know if you think it's not that it's a good idea. Like I said, it's done. But let me know if you would consider buying. It's not going to be expensive. I don't know if we're going to come out in hardcover or you know, big paperback. I'm not sure yet. But it depends on, I guess it depends on the publisher, what they think the traffic will bear. So anyway. All right, we have a break here coming up very quickly. When we come back, we're going to take some phone calls. And I got a bunch of emails here that I do want to share with you, and a couple other things that caught my eye today about Holy Joe Lieberman wants people to die, and the Senate and White House leadership are pretty much okay with that. This is something Nicole Bell wrote at Crooks and Liars today. A whole bunch of stuff. I don't know if we'll get to it all, but we will get your phone calls, too. The number here is 877-996-2556. So you're excused now. We'll be back in about 9 minutes. That gives you plenty of time to go fix a cheese sandwich or whatever. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Show. Yeah, if you missed it, I'll just make it brief. I have a book coming out fairly soon. We don't have an exact publishing date yet because Bob Alexander in Seattle is still working on the editing because I sent him too much. And it's up to him to slice and dice, and but soon, very, very, very soon, this will be ready to roll. And we're hoping that people will buy it. It's, well,
why else do you write a book?
But I gave Bob too much stuff. I gave him enough material for probably two books, and he doesn't want two books. He wants one. It's a little easier to work with material for one. So it was kind of overwhelming. That's the, it, again, just by way of explanation, that's one of the reasons that we haven't had a Radio Gumshoe lately. It's one of the reasons that we haven't had a Malloy blog. This has been pretty pretty focused, pretty intense, and pretty unnerving, frankly. as far as Radio Gumshoe, I think now there's going to be another one, what, on the Christmas show? Next week? I think next week. And I may start writing blogs again at some point. But, you know, this is, somebody told me it's like, you know, giving birth. You just have to kind of stick with this for the whole time, the writing time, the editing time, the screaming at each other time. And I am lucky that I have a good editor in Bob Alexander. A lot of people who write books, it goes to a publishing house or an agent who you don't know and who doesn't know you. And the function of that person is just to red pencil stuff right out of the book for no apparent reason. Sometimes they edit for space, brevity, yada, yada, yada. Bob Alexander, on the other hand, who is an excellent writer in his own right, as you all know, because you've heard me read his stuff for the past couple of years on this program. But it takes, I've always believed it takes a good writer to be a good editor. You can't edit your own stuff, but if you're a good writer, you can edit somebody else. And Bob Alexander is an excellent writer. So I haven't seen the result yet of what he's moved around or sliced and diced and how the chapters are set up and so on and so forth. I trust him at this point. If he screws up, I'll never buy his coffee again. But anyway. So just, you know, if you're at all supportive of the idea and would consider buying a copy, send me a quick email. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate. Just, hell yeah, I'll do it. And show a little love. All right, to your phone calls. Perez is in Santa Rosa, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Perez.
Hi, Mike. I'm really glad to hear you. I'm hearing myself a little echo here. So
yeah, I know. It's second. Is that better?
I have my radio off. Oh, that's much better.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't need to be my own noise machine. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm really proud of you. I think it's a great effort. And you know what they say about writing? I know some writers and stuff, and it's like, it's not unlike, there's a lot of mystery and a mystique around it, but I think some of it can be cut away saying that once you start writing, you have to work at it. You have to get up in the morning and start writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. I get that. Listen to me telling you.
Well, that's very true. It is very true. And, it's a real process because if you haven't had a lot of therapy, and I have had a lot of therapy, if you haven't had a lot of therapy and start writing a book of any sort, you'll probably have a nervous breakdown.
Oh, I agree. I think it's kind of like fasting. You got to be careful. If you got so much poison in you, a fast could almost kill you.
That's
anyway, I called. You inspired me, and I managed to glean some positive affirmation of what you were talking about Obama and stuff. But first, I want to say that I agree with you. These so-called Christians, oh, God, I hope they're right. I hope there is a hell because they're going to beat us there, Mike.
Oh,
they
man.
Won't beat us there.
You know, I cannot get my mind around praying for the destruction of an attempt to bring health insurance
to 50 million people who desperately need it. I don't get this.
Yeah.
Now, not that I agree with what the House and the Senate and the Obama administration have done with the idea. I agree with Bernie Sanders and Howard Dean. Dean is the point, says kill it. Bernie Sanders tried to introduce an amendment to all this mess, making it single payer. You know, I side with those guys, but I cannot believe that something that is a pure giveaway. See, this is how you know that it's all politics and insanity, because the way this thing's written now, it's a gold mine for the health insurance industry.
Yep.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I could talk about that for hours. I'm in the industry. But anyway, not in that industry, not in the insurance industry.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I would say this. It made me think, these people, I want to ask some of these people, the climate deniers especially, I'm hearkening to what you said a minute ago. That is the overarching issue that's going to be looked at.
It is.
If there's any history in the future, if there is a future, that's going to be looked at as the hallmark event. And here's the one I want to ask those people. Two questions. Do you think your money's going to protect you, and don't you care about what happens to your children?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
These bastards. I mean, they just make my blood boil. And when we were playing Dennis Kucinich, it had me crying almost, Mike. You know?
Yeah.
It almost had me crying. But I want to say one thing about Obama. I think he can be influenced by that argument. If you're really a Christian man, you know in your heart what you're doing is wrong, murdering these people. But I would say the positive affirmation is this about Obama. I'm trying to hurry because I know you have callers, and I want to take up too much time, Mike. But I would say this. Obama proves that we've moved beyond racism, because he can be just as evil as the bloated white parasites we think he replaced.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to think the same thing.
I'm sorry, but no. He's either a coward or he's just a shill.
I hear you.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. You and Kathy, keep up the good work, and I'm looking forward to the book.
All right, thanks, Briz.
Okay.
All right, man, take care. Yeah, I hate to say that about Obama. I think primarily because in my own head, it makes me look like a fool. And I hate it when I do things that make me look like a fool. Like I said, I had a friend who, all during the campaign, for, you know, the run up, what do we have, about 2 years, year and a half of it? My friend has been murdered. He was murdered in a suburb of Chicago. I don't know that it's been solved yet. It was just a crime of violence. He was shot dead. But he was an activist. He was a real lefty, not a faux left-winger. He was a real lefty. And if it's possible to scream at somebody through an email, he screamed an awful lot at me about, you know, what I was doing supporting Obama. And I kept telling him that I was supporting Kucinich, but that being a Democrat, once the primaries were over, I would have to support the Democratic candidate. And of course, he just, and nothing I didn't know, it's just that he just pounded me, until finally I had to say to him, I'm going to ask you to stop sending me these emails. And I'd known this guy since we were in Chicago. And he did. He stopped sending the emails. And then I got an email about 7 or 8 months ago. I guess it's been that long, from his, well, widow now, who told me that he'd been murdered in a robbery, and she and their two kids were just, they still were reeling with the horror of this. It occurred, she wrote me the email a day or two after it had happened. But I remember what he said over and over and over again and again and again. You can't support just another corporatist. It doesn't make any difference if he has a D. You've got to understand this. You're going to be so let down, blah, blah, blah. And he was right. And he was right. And not having had a chance to talk with him and say, look, you know, I know you're right. And, you know, I've come around on that issue. It, you know, it leaves a real sense of loss for me in my tiny world. Like yesterday, we don't get all my
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Email here from Tom in Joshua Tree. It's pretty intense. Which I certainly don't mind intensity, but this is pretty intense. Subject line is what I've come to. He writes, "Hi, Mike. I recall the Stupak Amendment that flushed the Christian rats from their nests, all the bishops and deacons who made it clear that a congressman's first obligation was to religion, not their country. Then comes Lieberman. This is what I've come to understand. Religion is the enemy of humanity, of democracy, and of all life in general. I understand that you do not include the Jews in all this monstrous lobotomy of the American psyche and policy because they, the Jews, do not mount wholesale world slaughter. But believe me, if they had 300 million members, they'd be right up there with the big boys when it comes to violence and vicious greed. My point is that monotheism is the enemy. Monotheists demand hell and death in order to make their fantasy and delusions of heaven halfway palatable. What the corporations have not yet done to America, American monotheists will. The monotheists know that there can be no God but their God, and all things good and worthy must be sacrificed to this God of theirs, the Constitution, law, art and literature, healthy environment, education, and now even the health of their own and their fellow Americans. Goodbye, e pluribus unum, and hello, in God we trust." So that's what I will be doing from this point on, working wholeheartedly to rid my country of these religious vermin, because Democrat or Republican, the monotheist is and always will remain a patriarchal, warmongering, life-killing ignoramus. There is no other battle. It's worse than the race war, because monotheism is not only the bedrock of slavery, but it is the very foundation of inhumanity, madness, and death. Just like no truth can come from a lie, so too no reality can emerge from the monotheist delusion. It is pneumonia, smallpox, polio, and malaria, all rolled into one, except that monotheism still and always will kill more than any disease ever will or ever could. I'll fight to uproot them and destroy their delusions anywhere I meet them, in the marketplace, in writing, at the post office, on the phone, on the bus, in art, and in the grocery line. I fully understand we will win every battle, but eventually we'll lose the war, simply because we are so outnumbered and outdumbed. Reason and rationality will become as obsolete and irrelevant in our country as reading and writing already has become. The Christians, Jews, Muslims, and all other monotheists will win, because all they need to prove their point is a whip, a knife, a gun, bomb, and Bible. Our country's lost, but our cause is not lost in the world. I live for that world and fight for the generations to come, so that when the question is asked, why didn't they stand up and fight, our voices and efforts will be there to say, we tried. Thanks for sharing, explicating, encouraging, and keeping it lit. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Well, I certainly agree with that. You know, the religious imperative, though, is so embedded that even railing against it can give you the creeps if you're not used to doing it. It's so embedded. Not just here, but every place. But when I see something like I saw tonight, I didn't actually see it. Kathy, or somebody sent me an email, said they were doing this prayer meeting in the Senate, of the House of Representatives. When I see that, when you see these religious people, all Christians, who would beat women to a pulp, who would deny women the right to privacy, they are patriarchal. Just like Tom said, they're patriarchal psychopaths. They really are. And the other two peoples of the book are the same. They are.
If you're a Jew or a Muslim, excuse me, but I just, you know what your religion's all about. You know what the heart of the teaching is. I don't care how many times Muslims, Christians, or Jews talk about, you know, it's love your neighbor and, you know, so on. So, oh, hog snot. Please. You know, I've attended enough churches and mosques and synagogues, not so many mosques, but churches and synagogues to know I know what the preaching's about. And I know what the so-called holy texts of these religions are about. And I also realize that I occasionally will beat this topic to death on this program. But as Tom points out, you tell me one other thing in the history of the human race, up to and including this very moment, that has caused so much hatred and distrust and mistrust and dissension and fear and loathing and murder and mayhem and wars and invasions and death and poison and disease and sickness than religion. Science hasn't done that. Philosophy hasn't done that. Poetry hasn't done that. Art hasn't done that. Theater hasn't done that. Politics hasn't done that. We'll be right back.
Monkey-free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Where are we? We're right here. Mike is in San Diego. You're listening on KTLK in San Diego?
Yes, I got to get it through the internet. It used to be.
Oh, you're streaming. I was going to say, man, they must have really boosted up their signal.
Well, you know, it's too bad we don't get. We used to have you on the air.
I know.
And the corporate criminals and thugs at Smear Channel that, you know, deigned to take that station, the late great KLSD, off the air. So
what did that become? Sports?
Yeah, all sports, and it's got horrible ratings, Mike. And
you had a guy on that station, a local guy, who was excellent. I don't know why.
A.C. Taylor.
Yeah, I don't know why he was not national. He was whatever happened to him?
Well, he is unemployed and still looking for work.
Jesus.
In the industry, and he's kind of been blackballed because, like yourself, Mike, he kind of worked, the progressive side of the street, and, you know,
yeah,
even though if you're a right-wing blowtard, you can get a job anywhere.
Sure.
But even if you're a talented, excellent announcer like Stacy or yourself, or professional, an excellent advocate for the people's interest,
mm-hmm,
well, then you're marginalized and put on hardly any stations. You can't get distribution.
That's true.
And it's an absolute fraud, and it's part of what these right-wing
bastards
use this country.
Yeah.
They use that big sound machine to reinforce their propaganda, to get out there that the endless warfare is somehow bringing democracy, to have a poverty draft in America, to ship America's poor young sons and daughters,
mm-hmm,
to the other side of the earth to fight poor tribesmen's sons and daughters for what they do not know,
mm-hmm,
for health care reform to be basically an insurance industry bailout, for these corporate criminals to get up there and tell us that, it's really going to cover 30 million people, but if you don't buy this crappy product, we're going to have the IRS penalize you and criminalize you, and we're going to pass a regressive policy, even though you thought for a progressive candidate. It was not change that you could believe in. It was change that you were deceived into. And what it is it's just the insidious corporate criminality, the commoditization of everything in American life. There's no public space in America. There's only commercial and private space.
Yeah, and that is really starting to bug the hell out of me, too. Mike, let me move on. I want to get some more on here. I appreciate what you had to say. If you ever run into Stacey Taylor, tell him that, you know, we were big fans of his. What a shame. 877-996-2556 is the number. Got a couple open lines here. Cam is in Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Cam.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I look forward to receiving your book, believe me.
Oh, thanks.
I'm a little sick right now, so I apologize. But in regard to Tom from Joshua Tree, California.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can sum that whole email up in one phrase. It's the dogma. Stupid.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that should be a T-shirt. I wish I could afford to have it made.
Yeah.
Listen, I called about health care, and Joe Lieberman, who is probably going to cause me to have a heart attack, I paid $351 a month for health insurance. I was diagnosed with asthma last week, and my insurance company won't cover my daily asthma medication, which is $132 a month.
Did they tell you why?
It's not on the formulary. And I'm now paying $483 a month. I've got a $500 deductible and 20% coinsurance, which means I'm 20% responsible for everything. I was told by... when I had an asthma attack, I didn't know what was happening, and I was told that by the paramedics I was having a heart attack. I was rushed to the hospital. I have a $6,000 emergency room bill for asthma, and this is just, I want to tell you this not to whine, but to tell the Republicans that are listening to your program, and I know they do, look, this is real. I only make $40,000 a year. How am I going to pay for this? I'm sick and I'm scared and I've had it. And I was a huge Obama supporter. I canvassed for him. And I can't believe this is coming down to one single whore, Joe Lieberman. I saw my doctor today who's also happens to be Jewish, and he told me, he said, this guy is the biggest prick I've ever known. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is our situation. I'm not alone.
No, you're not. You're absolutely not alone.
And I'm terrified. I'm going to be buried. I'm a homeowner. They can lean my house or do whatever, but how the hell am I going to pay for that? And I'm already paying almost $400 a month for an insurance policy that is a ghost.
Yeah.
And Mike, I'm sorry. I don't mean to whine, but I just
want I don't think anyone listening considers it whining, Cam. I certainly don't. It's a very real situation, and in this country, to have so many millions of us who have the situation that you have and other people have, I've been in that situation before. I can't understand that we have billions upon billions upon billions for war and death and destruction, but
exactly.
Just for simple health care for our own people.
Exactly. People that pay their taxes and work.
Yeah.
And
no, you're not whining. You're not whining at all.
No, I'm just absolutely terrified. And I wrote a letter, like it's going to do any good, to Senator. My senators are McCain and Kyle.
Oh, my God.
I mean, can you imagine the futility in that?
Well, you ought to see the two I've got.
Well, that's true. I'm not in Georgia, but
right.
You know what? I'm about two clicks away.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I thank you for listening to me.
Sure.
And I wish you and Kathy and Molly and your family a beautiful holiday.
Well, thanks, Cam, and just take it easy. Oh, listen.
Hey.
My son Chris, who is now 31, he had asthma as a result of he was slightly premature, and it dogged him all through his childhood. He went on to become an EMT and a firefighter, and now he's in nursing school. But
well, I happen to work for union lawyers for the fire department.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, one of the things that I've recently found out, when you feel those asthma attacks, or just not an attack, but the tightness in your chest.
Oh, yeah.
Most of what we've been told is to, you know, breathe deeply. But there is a new theory, and I've asked Chris to try it. When you feel the tightening, not necessarily attack, but you feel that tightening.
Yes.
Breathe rapidly and shallow breaths.
You're kidding.
No, not panting, but similar to it. And the reason it said, this was in, I think it was in the New York Times science section a couple of weeks ago. The reason you do that is part of the asthma attack is the buildup in your lungs and bronchioles of carbon dioxide. You're not expelling, you're not exhaling the way you should, and that causes the tightening, that causes that panicky feeling.
It is a very panicky feeling.
Right. So the theory is, I don't have asthma, but the theory is if you, instead of the deep breaths, as you dig and dig and dig to get oxygen,
and you're not getting it.
Do it rapid breathing, and not deep, just rapid breathing that will expel a lot of carbon dioxide. Now, I walk 4 or 5 miles a day, and sometimes I take weights, and I can get pretty winded doing that. And I've been trying that out on the walking trail, and it seems to work. Now, I'm not asking you to do something that's going to cause you to get worse. You know, I'll hear from your lawyer in 2 weeks.
Hey,
she tried what you said and she's dead. No, you know, but the next time you do it, just try it. Just the rapid, not panting. There's a difference. I'm not talking about that. Yeah, rapidly and shallow breathing and rapid, and it may work.
Well, I'll tell you, I was 150 points clear below the base, so it was not good news.
No, it wasn't.
I certainly appreciate the advice.
All right.
I'm new to this.
All right. Well, listen, you have a happy holiday, too, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Cam. Take care. Take care. I hope that's okay. Is it okay to say that over the air? I've read it. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's not medical advice. It just, but seriously.
Just keep repeating that. It's not medical advice. I am not a physician.
I am not a physician. But I've tried it.
Don't take me seriously.
I've tried it out on that damn trail when, you know, I'm walking to stay alive. Well, you know what I mean. And you get that, you start to get that. Well, don't. Just take shallow, deep, or shallow, rapid breaths, and you never know. We'll be right back. Before the hour, thanks to the crew, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent. Bruce must be on vacation or something. Come to think of it, I haven't gotten anything from him for a few days. Kate Petrini, education affairs correspondent, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who handle the ethical advice when it's needed to this program, and Kathy Bay, who is the program's engineer and also the executive producer. Jimmy is driving in Kansas, listening on XM. Hey, Jimmy.
What's up, Mike?
You are.
Yeah, I am. Wait a minute. Hey, first time caller, love your show, love what you guys do.
Well, thank you.
Anyway.
Now, remember, you're listening on XM, but we do over the air, so watch your language.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I know. You XM and Sirius people, I have to remind you every once in a while. I don't blame you. I get pretty mouthy. I get pretty profane on this program, but there's a line that we're not allowed to cross, and I hate to end a phone call because of an F-bomb or something like that. So that's all. Just like, heads up.
Okay. I've done a lot of things in my life. I got 11 years in the Army. I've worked for contractors during Iraq too. And, I'm running my own business now. I have been for about 11 years.
Uh-huh.
I think the problem is real simple. What's been going on? The insurance companies, after 8 years of Bush, that was the final nail in the coffin for everybody.
Yeah.
They were getting ready to go out of business, man. They're getting ready to go out of business because nobody could afford their products anymore. So they went to their corporate spokesman. We don't have a government anymore. What we've got is corporate spokesman up there.
You got that right.
And they said, hey, you're going to have to pass a law. Now, it's kind of ironic that if you look at the middle class and lower, if you look at their tax returns at the end of the year, that's exactly what the insurance companies are asking for. So they found the money they needed, and now they're getting ready to pass a law to get it.
I think you're right. Well, the tax return plus.
Yeah. Now, the people of America, if I can say something to them, they're going to have to take a look at what our grandfathers and what our fathers and mothers had to do in the past to get what they needed done to keep a nation under their feet. Because we're getting ready to lose a nation. Is what's getting ready to happen. They're going to have to stop what they're doing, slow down. I almost cussed then. Slow down and march on Washington. That's what we're going to have to do. That's it. Nothing's ever been done until the people got mad enough to make it happen. So we can slowly starve to death, or we can finally say, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and do without a meal now and walk up there and make ourselves be heard. Put religion aside, get religion out of it, open your mind, and take a real look at what's going on, and realize we don't have a government anymore. We've got corporate spokesmen. That's what we've got.
Yeah.
Joe Lieberman, he has nothing to worry about. Even if he gets voted out, he's got a job making 10 times more than he's making now. That's why he did what he did.
Well, you know, I, again, last night we tried to figure it out, and the idea that Lieberman is, with help from the person who wrote the article, Robert Perry, Lieberman is more interested in cutting the legs out from Obama where it concerns Israel than he is in making sure Americans get health insurance, no matter how weak a health insurance bill would be. Lieberman is an absolute Zionist, as a lot of, Perry only quoted one, very prominent Jew in America has said that their man in the Senate, beyond anybody else, is Joe Lieberman. And what adds insult to injury, Lieberman would do anything to ensure the survival of the state of Israel that has single payer health care. but here, you see, Holy Joe is not going to allow it in this country. That's the part that is so infuriating. But the idea that Lieberman does this for his ego, or Lieberman does it because he's on the pad for these insurance companies back in Connecticut, Perry says, no, that's a little bit too small time. What Lieberman is doing is trying to make sure that Barack Obama's power is totally wasted on this health insurance thing, so that when it comes time to put pressure on Netanyahu and the Likud government in Israel, that he just won't have the political capital to do it. Hey, Jimmy, I got to move on. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, all right? Drive safe. Michael is in New York. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. Congratulations, by the way, on being picked up by so many local radio stations around the country.
Well, yeah, if we can just get back into New York, where we'd love to be, but, two chances of that happening.
Oh, well. I heard what you were saying about, swearing off the Democratic Party, and I agree with you. I am there. As a matter of fact, you mentioned you were ready to vote for the Green Party or the Socialist Workers Party. I think, personally, they're both okay. I kind of prefer the Green Party to the Socialist Workers, but the real thing is,
well, wait, let me just qualify something. You know, I haven't said Socialist Workers Party. I don't know that much about them. They
did
sound
say that, or you didn't say that?
No, I did not say that.
I thought you did.
What I said is a Democratic Socialist. There is a difference, I think.
Right.
Socialist Workers Party.
I think of the Socialist. They're Trotskyist. I must admit.
Yeah,
they're not my first choice.
They tend towards that Russian style of almost communism, which I don't like. But Democrats.
Well, they're sort of crazy too. You know, I don't go for the Greens, but I'll tell you, the real thing is people have to put in the work that it takes to build the Green Party, because the Green Party is like nowhere. And frankly, I think Nader did a tremendous disservice to everybody when he ran for president on the Green Party ticket. Because, you know, let's face it, a Green Party candidate isn't going to become president in the next years. At least he could have gone for a congressional
seat, and there
he would have had a real impact.
Yeah,
that's where they have to target the Congress.
That's true. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they'll never have a president of the United States, but it's going to take a lot of work. Hey, Michael, I got to leave it there, pal. We're flat out of time. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?